This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
Final hour of Bennett Woods. We've got some audio from Ethan Salas that we're going to share with you coming up later this hour. Before we get to the Arundel report as well, thanks again to Brett Boone, who just joined us in our last segment. It is funny. I mean, he talked about the New York fans. I thought your question, Woods, was really good. Does that make you a good fan or a bad fan to be reactionary, to not have patience for the nature of baseball? You know, good teams will go through slumps, sometimes month-long slumps. The 1998 Padres were awful in June, if I remember correctly. He didn't fire Bruce Bochy. He didn't, you know, throw away the team. They ended up going to the World Series and having a great year.
These Mets were 11 games under 500, you know, and
people were burying them.
6 games into the season, I think we played the audio from Gary Cohen back when it happened. He said, it's time to fold up the tents. Like, this team is going, it's 6 games in. Gary Cohen's a really smart baseball man, too. And I think he was feeling the vibe of the New York fans, too, because I don't think Met fans are any different than Yankee fans. And really, you know, a lot of teams like that. But, you know, I've been that way in my life, and I certainly am a championship or bust type person. That's what you play for, and I think that's what you GM for, and that's what you're an owner for. You will never change my mind. If you come in here and tell me, well, I mean, 100 wins is good, and it's cool, and it's great. It's great. But if you don't win the last game, it just doesn't really matter to me. It was fun, and I loved covering it, and I was inspired several times.
I mean, I look at the playoff teams, the ones that are left, the ones that are not left. You'll never not be able to convince me that the team that was best built to win in the playoffs and win a World Series
was this one.
Was not the San Diego Padres.
I know.
I will still believe that. It's baseball, though. It doesn't mean that they, you know, that doesn't guarantee you anything.
Yeah, man.
You know, if they played the playoffs 20 times, maybe the Padres win 10 or 11 World Series. But this wasn't one of them, unfortunately. What does that mean, though? What do you do about that?
Look, and I get frustrated at reactionary fans during the season sometimes. I do. And I can also be one at times. The older I get, maybe the less reactionary I get, the more I watch, I watch a ton. I always have really been since I've been 10 years old, but you get older, priorities change, your mentals change, you don't live and die as much, you have to realize sometimes that you can't. Somebody had a great tweet, I think I retweeted it the other day, about playoff baseball, and not that it was excruciating, but the cool thing about playoff baseball, I'm going to look for it, but it's getting mad about the way that Mike Schilt manages his bullpen in a game in May, whether he's too aggressive or not aggressive enough or whatever, you know, like, I don't get super upset about those anymore. Whereas I might have used to, like, this is ridiculous and blah, blah, blah. You kind of want to let it play out a little bit more. But you know what, man? Everybody's different, certainly. I can't live that way during a baseball season anymore. I can't, because last year, 23 almost ended my life, dude. So I've had to make some changes in the way that I fan. But I do agree, and I will always agree, if you don't win the championship, it wasn't a super successful season.
But ultimately, I mean, even if the Mets win the World Series, there's not a person in the world, including their own GM, who thought 6 months ago that this was a World Series team.
It's a good point. Here it is. From our buddy Definite Expert tweets, the playoffs whip ass because they mostly do manage these games the way a drunk guy at a bar thinks the manager should be handling the same situations against the Rockies on a Tuesday night in May. It summed it up for me perfectly, because you're watching a game against the Rockies in May. It's a Tuesday night and you're like, you got to pull him. He gave up 2 runs in the first inning. He's done. You got to go to your long man, or you got to go to this guy, or you got to pinch hit for this guy. You know, Doesn't work that way. It can't work that way. Mike Schilt can't manage that way. Aaron Boone can't manage that way. I understand it. It's a really hard sport to cover. It's a massively hard sport to understand. But I don't know that that makes you a smart and passionate fan if you think that you should win every game. I think it kind of makes you an imbecile because there's no way. It's never been done. It's never been done. It never will be done. That I will go. I will promise you, no one will ever go 162-0. So it's hard to watch your team punt games. It's hard to watch your team punt series. It's hard to watch your team throw Adam Mazur out there on the mound sometimes. Sometimes you got to do what needs to be done to play the long game. And not every fan is necessarily always cut out for the long game.
All right, let's turn the page a little bit, and we'll get some headlines from Pauly. It's time for the Rindle Report.
And get things started here with our edition, today's edition of the Rindle Report.
Now tuned into the greatest.
Welcome to the Rindle Report with Paul Rindle.
Hi, Paul.
All right.
Two stories from the world of sports that we haven't gotten to yet.
We'll start off in Major League Baseball.
And one story that you didn't know you needed.
Are you laughing, biatch?
It's the Rindle Report.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
On 97.3 The Fan.
Are you ready to bless the mood? I need some help, please.
That was good.
Can I get a hoy? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right. Gentlemen, we'll start in the NFL. Update to a story we've been following just a little bit over the last few weeks and months. NFL league meetings yesterday, the big news was that Tom Brady was approved as a minority owner for the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, we talked about that earlier in the month because him being a Fox broadcaster, an NFL analyst now, if he were to be approved, which he now is, as a team owner, he's going to lose a lot of access to other teams that he covers. Typically, if him and Kevin Burkhardt are covering, you know, Eagles, Browns this weekend, sure, you know, whatever, they have Zoom meetings. They sometimes go into the training facilities. Sure. They sit down with practices, the quarterback, yep, the coaches. Like, they are in the facilities. They're getting their notes together. They're following all the storylines. He ain't going to be able to do that anymore.
Right. I mean, yeah, they give broadcasters information going, yeah, don't say this until like after the fact, but here are some plays you can look for. I mean, yep, you can hear it sometimes when you're watching a broadcast, like Troy Aikman or stuff. Like, he'll give you kind of a hint, like, oh, I'm kind of expecting you could be a trick play here sort of thing. That's because they've been given heads up beforehand in those meetings during the week of what, you know, what's going to be unfolding on the field. It helps them as broadcasters. But like if Robert Kraft all of a sudden was a broadcaster, they wouldn't let him into like the Jets team meetings and go, okay, well, let's, you know, tell me all about your
here's
secret plays
plan
and everything, because he's an owner. So you can't do that in other teams. So yes, that is an issue for Tom Brady.
Yeah, Tom Brady.
So,
go ahead.
You just started this thing 6 weeks ago.
He's been working on the Raiders thing a lot longer than the last 6 weeks.
You're brand new in broadcasting, and I haven't heard much because like I said, I've been pretty checked out on the NFL. I heard his first game and it wasn't good. That's to be expected. It's your first game. Everybody's first game was probably terrible. How do you grow and do your job? In my opinion, I feel like you should have to do one or the other. Now, if you wanted to buy the Toronto Raptors, great, have a ball.
Sure.
Have a ball. Nobody cares. You're an owner of this. Oh, you want to buy a part of a baseball team? Great, have a ball.
Clark Hunt, the owner of Kansas City, said, I think a lot of owners around the league felt that this was a potential conflict. It's hard to know whether it will be an actual conflict, but it can be a potential conflict or perceived conflict.
It's a perceived
Roger Goodell
conflict.
Said, Tom's been abiding by the issues that we raised through the committee voluntarily since he began broadcasting, so that's all been resolved. The restrictions will stay in place. Yeah. He's not allowed to roam around, you know, the Seahawks
Jets
facility
practice
or
yes,
anything like that. He cannot do any of that. So
why would you even want to do the broadcast? I mean, the money that they're paying
$300 million
through the roof.
I don't even know if it's Tom. I think Fox still will say we just want the name.
Yeah.
He is very, I mean, what I've seen, you know, he's really good at analyzing quarterback situations.
I'm
like, here's
not
what,
surprised.
Here's exactly what he
His
saw here. Here's why he threw
valuable.
This in interception.
Okay.
he will add some valuable insight that other people probably won't be able to add. So, you know, Fox is going to go, whatever. We'll just, we'll, whatever we can get, we can get. Now, are they overpaying
guys,
for it? Probably.
Wouldn't you guys want one or the other? And which one would you want if you were, if it was you, Ben, or you, Paul? And same money. So Paul Reindel, $300 million to broadcast, or you're going to spend your own money, but you're going to own part of the Raiders. Which one would you guys want? 100%.
See, I'd want to be the broadcaster.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, God, not me. Sitting in the luxury box every weekend having a ball.
I'd want someone paying me the big money, and all I have to do is, you know, give my...
opinions.
Give my 2 cents on everything. When you're the owner, you know, then you're responsible for everything.
Well, from the Raiders' point of view, Mark Davis, he met with reporters yesterday, and he said, Tom is somebody that for many years I didn't like very much.
Yeah,
he's referencing,
sure,
you know, the Tuck rule from the early 2000s. He goes, he did admit that it was a fumble, so those are important aspects of the situation. We're just really proud to have him as a partner. He's a competitor. He's a bright young man. Although Tom can't play, I think he can help us select a quarterback in the future and potentially train him as well.
Sure.
I mean,
it's interesting, man.
Pretty smart investment. All right.
Yeah, what a gig that is, the owner.
Yeah. Any level of ownership.
Any level.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to baseball. We talked about the Tropicana State Airfield and the damage that it took in Hurricane Milton. Was that last week?
Last week.
The roof was, like, completely ripped apart and just torn off. I saw, like, fragments of the roof were found all over the area.
Yeah.
People were taking them and selling them and all of that. And it was awful. I mean, it was a site for first responders, a shelter spot for them. And the roof has just completely been torn apart. And now, I'm obviously naive. I saw that and I go, that's really bad. I didn't even think that this was going to take months, if not years, to repair.
Well, it's not only the time. It's nine figures is what they're estimating that it's going to cost.
It's like a custom.
That means at least $100 million.
Yeah.
To repair this so that you can play baseball in April, if you're the Tampa Bay Rays, knowing you've also already been approved for a new stadium that they're going to build.
Yeah.
You're throwing $100 million into renovations. You can't do it.
And even if they wanted to, it won't be done.
It won't be ready.
By opening day.
They do not have
a home now for 2025. And yeah, it's a custom Teflon coated, like, fiberglass roof. Like you said, at least $100 million. And even if they're like, oh, we got to do it, you know, even though we're going to build the new one, like, it won't be ready in time for next season.
You couldn't if you wanted to. So then it begs the question, where the hell are they going to play?
We're
going
to have two teams now in baseball playing in, like, minor league stadiums?
So a couple of options I saw were, you know, the Durham Bulls playing in Durham. So two teams, one in Sacramento, one in Durham. The Tampa Bay Rays playing in Durham. I don't know why Durham out of all of those facilities. It's just one thing that I saw.
Triple-A ballparks are the biggest of the minor league parks.
Is that the closest one to them?
That's, I think, fairly reasonably close.
Okay.
So, you know, there's a lot of single A parks and spring training parks.
But the Oakland Rays.
Florida.
You had the Oakland Rays.
Idea.
How about the Oakland Rays?
Montreal Rays. They've been clamoring to get a team back since the Expos. I saw the San Juan Rays and, you know, playing in Puerto Rico, which is not that far away.
Ben and Woods trip.
They've had,
I love the Rays.
They've
I
had
always
Major League
Rays.
Baseball games with Hiram B. Thorne Stadium in Puerto Rico.
When do we play the Rays?
So there is certainly the possibility of moving them around.
So they said, essentially, too, you can't just leave the roof off. There's no drainage.
Right.
Why did they put no drainage in? Because they had a roof.
Well, and it wasn't just the roof that was impacted. I mean, parts of the building were damaged. Offices were damaged. It really took a beating in that hurricane.
It rains way too much there. Hence why they had to put the roof on in the first place. So,
right.
What a nightmare. Do we welcome them to San Diego?
Oh, like when the Padres are... Well, I mean, they've already had the schedule out, so I can't imagine that would... I mean, unless you had to rework the entire Major League Baseball schedule, they can't share a Major League ballpark with someone else.
Especially across the country.
Yeah, that's not going to work. I mean, they need an empty stadium. I think it's
the Temecula Rays.
I think it's going to be hard for the players because ultimately they're probably going to have a number of different home stadiums, you know, some in Durham, maybe go to San Juan, maybe play in your spring training complex a few times. Midweek games that weren't going to be that. I mean, how many fans were they getting in midweek games anyway?
4,200.
14,000 at most. Right. I mean, they could probably play a lot of their games just at their spring training park in Florida, you know, in a lot of those games. Will they have to play some home games on the road? Probably.
Can I recommend Orange Glen High, Pauly, where we play the side of many Tier 1 games? Well,
I love Orange Glen.
Simply
the
best.
London Rays.
No. And
you can do
too
just
far.
An entire London
bad idea.
Home
bad,
schedule.
Horrible idea. Horrible.
Bad idea, Ben.
Mexico City Rays.
Maybe.
Seoul Korea Rays.
That's a little bit of a piece. That's a little bit of a piece.
All right. And then finally, yesterday we talked about the Conquer Championships,
yes,
and all the scandal.
Chestnut cracking.
We compared it to everything that happened last year with the fishing scandal. Now I've got chess scandal. More chess scandal. You guys remember the story from maybe earlier this year?
It was earlier this year. The guy had something in his bum.
The grandmaster had a...
He had a little device.
A little toy.
In his bum.
In there, and he was getting...
Getting signals?
Signals. Via vibrations.
From who? I forget. Was it an AI or something? That who was helping the guy who's supposedly the best guy in chess in the world be better at chess?
Jose Altuve was a pretty good hitter. He took some help.
Over at the...
Yeah, but it's not as though you have to steal any signs. The board is right in front of you. Right. You can see what everyone else can see. There's no...
Just
no,
telling
like,
you what the best move
chess.
Is.
Yeah, maybe they're putting it in a computer.
But isn't he the guy who should be telling other people who the best move
was?
He's
a fraud. He's a cheater.
If there was someone who was better, why aren't they just playing the chess game right there?
Well, he's got a computer. Supercomputer.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Is there a supercomputer telling him what to do?
So, over at the Spanish Team Championships this week, a young man from, I think from the Ukraine, Kirill Shevchenko, he was disqualified, and it turns out that he was at least suspected of using a cell phone in the bathroom when he said he was going to go make a duty. He was actually on his phone using one of those computer softwares and
Chess King.
Figuring out his next move.
There's just a site you can go to that gives you the best moves. I'd be the best chess player in the world.
He left his seat again to go to the bathroom, and his opponent was like, I'm starting to get suspicious about this.
I need to go, duty. I'll be right back. I'm right back.
And it says here, the cleaning service at the hotel where this championship tournament was being held, they found a mobile phone in the toilet of the hotel where everything was happening, and it said, there was a note on it. It said, do not touch. Phone is for emergencies when guests need to make calls at night.
Brilliant.
Housekeeping saw that, and they raised questions, and they said, this is not supposed to be here.
This phone is not for chess. No chess on this phone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So they turned the phone in. It belonged to the kid that was disqualified, and now people are very upset.
You get a chess player, Ben?
I did play. My kids played a little bit for a few years as well, but I have not played in many years, and I was never that good at chess.
I've never even tried. Never once.
Huh? No.
I tried. I was like when I was like 10. Got into it a little bit. It's tough.
I understand like how all the pieces move, and
I don't.
You know what you're trying to
Somebody
accomplish.
Somebody tried to explain it once, and my ADD.
The
I was
whole
like no.
Looking like four or five moves ahead. Like okay, he's going to do this. I'm going to do that.
Then like I could play the game. Like I know what parts how they move, but I wouldn't want to.
All right. Here's a question for you as we go to our break, and we can talk about this when we come back. If AI is so smart, and apparently it is, it can beat chess masters, you know, who are the best in the world. Why wouldn't you just have AI manage your baseball game for you?
Good question.
And will a team try that at some point?
Do teams
are they already doing it? I don't know.
I bet you there's some use.
You've seen Forever. They have we ran the simulation 10,000 times,
right,
and this team is going to win the World Series or whatever.
Wouldn't be hard to do if you were a baseball team. I mean, not hard at all. We will come back. We'll give away some of those concert tickets to Orville Peck as well. All next with Bennett Woods after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So how many times do we hear over the course of the season, Mike Schilt explaining a decision, saying, that one of those 50-50 type calls that you have to make as a baseball manager. Do I bunt? Do I hit away? You know, do I switch my pitcher here? Do I stick with them? A lot of gut instincts that are involved in being a manager. Sometimes there are clear, like, all right, I know the numbers on this guy. I'm definitely playing the percentages. I'm going with that decision. But a lot of the time, even the numbers aren't that clear on something. But it's rarely exactly 50-50. Usually you can get, all right, in this case, if we ran it 10,000 times, 52% of the time, the right call would be to bring in this pitcher. 48% of the time, it would be to bring in this other pitcher. What if you could guarantee that every single time you were making the call in favor of the 52% instead of the 48%? Not a huge difference, but over the course of 162 games, what if making that right call percentage-wise wins you three more games over the course of the year?
Three games is a lot over the course of the year.
Could an AI manager, an absolute, like an algorithm that was written specifically for that purpose with the, you know, supercomputer backing of the cloud, could they do a better job managing a game than the manager? No. At least the decision making?
Not in my opinion. I think there's things that go into managing that a computer can't know. And I like analytics a lot. I do. And I wish I knew more about how to hit when I was younger, you know, and what was really important. I really feel like people of my generation, 49 years old is what I am right now. I really feel like we were taught to hit the wrong way our whole lives. I really do. I feel like every coach failed us. I feel like all of our dads, you know, just working with the info that they had at the time. I feel like I was taught to pitch the wrong way. There's so much more now. Now, again, I don't know how much I would have delved into it, but I would like to know how important, how fast I swing, you know, and how I can work on to improve my swing speed and things like that. My bat path, all of these things were not a thing, man. But a lot of analytics, like Michael says in the chat, there's a lot of this going on in baseball now. Sure, that's what deeply analytical teams already do. But I think,
well, they prepare their manager to make what they believe are the statistically correct decisions. But I don't think any team that I know of has like a cell phone in the dugout that's telling you, all right, 52% this way. They have to make those decisions on their own, on the fly, which makes it different. I'm saying if you literally could have an iPad in the dugout, and every just situation that comes up, you just plug in and you go, all right, 56% this way, I'm going with this decision. Now,
so
the manager may still be in charge of, you know, hey, set the tone, you manage your personalities, you do all that. But in terms of the true, who do I pinch hit here? Do I call for a hit and run here or not? Do I call for a steal here or not? You are letting the computer make every single decision. Would your team be better off?
I don't know. I don't think so. Because I think what you're not taking into account is, hey, you have a baby. You kept you up all night. You feel like you don't feel good. You got the flu potentially. You got a cough. Your legs are weak. Your knee's hurting you. Your groin hurts. Your arm's killing you. You know, whatever. I think. The human element is why you have a manager.
Well, and I think ultimately you could promise me my team was going to do better going by the computer's recommendations 100% of the time. That's not what competition or sports is. It's a human game.
Yeah,
and that
sure
involves also the coaches and the people who are making those decisions. You need to allow for that human aspect. I don't want to be right every time.
I really don't either.
I want to prove which guy is got the better instincts. And yeah, prepare him with all the numbers that you want. Give him that information that lets him, for the most part, you know, go with what's statistically beneficial for his team. But you can't just have an artificial intelligence deciding.
No,
at that point, every team will do it.
Unless
they're
robotic players. if you have robotic players, right.
then it's kind of a video game at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny in a video game, it'll show like guys' stamina. He's at 61%. In real baseball, you don't have the luxury of looking at a slider that tells you where they're at mentally, physically.
You probably could estimate it pretty well just based on like, hey, if the program was detailed enough, all right, yeah, he's played in 160 games, he's had these injuries, he's now operating at 82% efficiency from where he was before. You could estimate it.
How are things at home? You know, how are things at home? Is his wife he and his wife going at it? Are they, is he in the middle of a divorce? Is she leaving him? What's happening in his head mentally? Where is he at? Is he in a great mood? Is he in a terrible mood? Does he want to be here today? Does he not want to be here today? You know, there's all those things that, you know, the managers, know. Somebody made a good point. If analytics was a thing in 88, Kirk Gibson probably does not bat there. In fact, Kirk Gibson's probably not on the roster. And he had one at bat in that series. That's it. One. And he hit a home run and never batted again. So got your one swing out of him.
Not an efficient use of
a roster spot. You know, imagine if it was our team and we had one broken down player in the year 2024. Let's say in 5 years from now it's Manny and he's on one leg. And you're like, why is he on the roster? He can't play third, which is where his huge value is. Why is he on the roster? He may be able to pinch hit in a spot. And we'd lose our minds unless he did that. But yeah, you would never do it in the year 2024 and beyond. But
I mean, just because it worked for the Dodgers in 1988 doesn't necessarily mean
it was a good move.
It was the right call.
I know. It's crazy to think that. But
that's
yeah,
the thing.
It's crazy. But yeah, the intangibles of baseball is what keeps me coming back. I don't ever want it to be so robotic like that.
All right, how is Ethan Salas doing? He's at the Arizona Fall League, coming off a pretty good season, not maybe the perfect season of minor league baseball, but you know, pretty good season. We've got some sound for you coming up. First, though, we've got tickets to give away. If you want to win a pair of tickets to Orville Peck at Cal Coast Credit Union Open Air Theater on Saturday, October 26th, you can call right now. Our third caller is going to win at 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. Limited tickets for Orville Peck remain at Ticketmaster.com, and we'll come back with Ethan Salas next year on 97.3 The Fan. Paulie giving away those concert tickets right now to Orville Peck to Steve. Congratulations, Steve. I just saw a concert-related tweet here from a guy I follow, have met a few times. Becker says, I went to a Newfound Glory concert last night. There was a dude who was there only to crowd surf. He must have done it like 10 times, and he wasn't a light dude either. Have you ever crowd surfed, Woods?
I'm trying to think.
Paulie?
No.
Never crowd surfed? I feel like I'm way too big to be the subject of crowd surfing.
Like Jack Black in School of Rock, or he jumps off and they all just come.
I've moshed before.
Moshed.
At a Metallica show.
What technically is moshing? Is it just like jumping up and down in a group of a lot of people?
You get in there and you're like, oh, ow, ow.
That's a little more intense than I was expecting.
It's aggressive.
I'm actually going to be a little sore. for a couple of days after that. Hi, everybody.
It's very aggressive, but I was like 16.
It like moves in a circle.
Yeah, and you just run your turn, and then you just like beat the crap out of each other.
Really?
Yeah, it's cool.
That's moshing.
Yeah.
Just thought it was really enthusiastic dancing.
No, more than that. It's hard not to take offense, too. Like, you know you're all there for the same reason you love this band. But it's also hard to be like, hey, you crossed the line there, buddy.
If I was at a show, I don't think I'd want the responsibility of having to make sure that person is being passed
now,
along
I have
all the way
done
down.
That. I've pushed
to the front. Now, yes. do you push them back or forward? How does crowd surfing usually work? Do you start at the back
so
or the front?
Try to get them out of the way. So sometimes what they'll do is like they'll try to surf their way to the front. But there's also been bands that let you come up on stage
and leave from the stage, jump in, and then take you to the back.
You pass them back into the side. So it really depends on where you're at.
Maybe next time we have a big tier one event and we have like, you know, we had it 7 Mile or Rick's Baja Cantina. We can finish the show and crowd surf out into our tier ones.
I don't want to hurt anybody. We have to sign, you know, we probably have to sign like documents.
Mostly me.
Hey, there's no moshing allowed. Hey, no crowd
insurance
surfing.
Won't allow it.
Dude, yes. I tend to agree with that.
How do the concerts get insurance for this?
I don't know.
How come we don't hear about lawsuits involving crowd surfing all the time? Seems like it would be rife for lawsuits.
I saw a video yesterday of Fugazi playing like 1980 something in D.C. And the band is on stage, and there's just fans on stage with them, and they're jamming. Fans are diving into the drums. They're diving into the amps. They're diving into the crowd. And maybe 16, 17-year-old me would have been like, hell yeah, man, let me get on this. 49-year-old me was just filled with anxiety. I was like, this looks like the worst thing I've ever seen.
Adam in the chat says, people still moshing. It's stupid. I witnessed a girl get clocked in the head. She wasn't even involved.
Oh.
She ended up dying a couple of days later due to a head injury. This was at SDSU. God. Okay, well, that just brought the whole conversation to a sad, sad ending.
Okay.
Trying to have a lighthearted
sad
conversation.
Sad trombone.
Shout out to his family.
Her family.
Shout out to her family. I couldn't do it now. I'll tell you that. I don't even like when there's a huge crowd around me at a show. I'm just like, I'll sacrifice
usually,
my spot.
No, crowd surf on your back, right?
You can do both.
You can crowd surf on your front.
Yeah, you can
do both. See, now I'd be worried about
people grabbing your
touching.
Yeah, I know.
Parts and stuff. Either way, just seems like it would be uncomfortable and not really that much fun.
It does. It's never seemed cool to me either. Like, I think there would be something to. I think it'd be kind of cool if everyone's into it and the band let you come on stage and you got to run off the stage. Yeah, I think that'd be kind of cool.
Like a trust fall.
But you're not going to go on your back. You're going to go front
forward,
so you can maneuver your landing, I think.
I guess. I don't know. I don't think you have much control at that point. Once you've left your feet, it's up to other people how you land and where you're going.
Calvin says he moshed at a Rage Against the Machine concert back in the day. It was wild. Yeah, this Metallica show I was at was nuts. It was on the floor of Texas Stadium. It was about 110 degrees, and it just got out of control. It was just bananas, and you're looking over your shoulder, and it's just it's a young man's game, I do feel. Wouldn't it be weird if I, at 49, was like, oh, yeah, I got in the mosh pit this weekend. Like, you're a dad, dude. What are dads doing in the mosh pit? But it's different. It's different. Nate says people definitely move out of the way now. You would face plant for sure. Oh, that's good. FAS Shipping and Receiving says, I was in a mosh pit at the 90s at Hollywood Palladium. Some guy was stabbing people with a small pocket knife while moshing.
Ah, see? There you go.
Very cool.
All right, let's check traffic when we come back. We got some audio was sent to me from an Ethan Salas appearance yesterday.
That's one guy that I don't want to see moshing
at all.
Or stage diving in the near future.
And we'll set that up right after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So, yeah, I got sent this YouTube clip yesterday. It was the Hot Sheet guys from Baseball America, and they had a chance to chat with Ethan Salas, who's currently competing in the Arizona Fall League with some of his Padres fellow prospects and doing pretty well. Defensively, looks sharp. His OPS is like over 880 or something. He's having a nice little fall, and they got to catch up with him about how the AFL is going for Ethan Salas and just some general stuff. So we thought we'd bring it to you, Padres fans.
Did you follow the playoffs? By the way, I know obviously you're not up at the big league club yet, too.
Yeah,
but
no,
did you follow what just happened? What'd you think?
Yeah, I was watching. It was a rough ending, but the boys, they played hard and they showed out, so I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was
so
fun.
Ethan,
obviously fun team to follow there. Go ahead, JJ.
Yeah, so Ethan, you know, you've had a long season, and I say that, you know, catchers, obviously, it's the hardest job in baseball. Here you are, you keep it going, you're doing the Arizona Fall League. How's it gone, do you feel like, for you so far? But I guess even more importantly, where are you hoping to get out of your month in the AFL?
Yeah, no, I've a long year, definitely. Body's holding up really good. I feel really strong. Just going to go keep playing. Just really excited for this extra month of baseball. Obviously, I finished the year strong, and I just wanted to keep carrying that on. And yeah, just bring it into the fall league, come with the same confidence, the same drive, and the same like love for the game that I had at the end of the year. And just go keep performing, keep having fun, try to win.
Like you said, you kind of had a strong finish. Did it feel like it's like, hey, I'm glad that this isn't ending yet, that I'm, you know, that I can keep kind of my 24 going?
Exactly. Yeah, that was my exact thought process. I was like, dang, like, I started getting hot towards the end of the year, and I was like, dang, like, why does the season have to end now? We can't just keep playing, but it is what it is. And thankfully, I have this extra month of games and just going to come out, meet all the guys, and just keep enjoying the games and having fun with it.
Hey, have you gotten to speak to some of the big leaguers on this current Padres team? And if so, who? And, you know, anything specific that you can point out that you guys – have talked about? Obviously, there's quite a few big name players on that ball club.
Yeah, no, I haven't talked to a lot of the guys. I talked to Jackson a little bit the other day. No, just catching up. He's probably going to come out here, watch a couple of the games. But no, just talking to him a little bit, just catching up. Nothing really too into depth.
It's pretty dynamic.
So, Ethan, I'm old. I remember a little bit, but seeing your dad play in Macon many years ago. And, you know, you grew up in a baseball family. What if, you know, like, what was that like kind of coming up, you know, like having – you know, having a dad, you know, having a brother also, but having a family where there's others who kind of know the path, who kind of know what you're going through.
It's huge. It's really good because I can learn from them and learn, like, talk about them, talk with them about their experiences, because they've gone through what I've been going through, and not just having those people there who get you and are there to talk baseball with you. I think it's really good. And We just pick each other's brains and learn from each other's experience. And yeah, I mean, that's been a huge part for me, just picking their brains and how can we all help each other? Cause we've all been through the same process. So I think that helps a lot. It's a big advantage I have.
So Ethan, you see, you know, you're around him a little bit last year in spring training and your time in big league camp. You see Jackson Merrill break camp, go on to have all the success and kind of become one of the guys in the lineup, both in the regular season and also have a lot of success in the postseason. How does that, you know, excite, encourage, motivate you as you continue to climb through pro ball and, you know, you see a homegrown talent from, you know, the Padres system be able to contribute in such a, I guess, productive way for the big league club?
Yeah, I know it's exciting. It just shows like how fast things happen in baseball. I was with them on the same team last year in Double A, and like things can just happen so fast. So it kind of goes to show like you're not really that far away, no matter like what level you're at. And I'm just really excited just to get up there, obviously, and contribute in the way he has, and just the energy that he's brought to that house and stuff he's taught me. Just being around him is. It shows, and I'm glad that he got to show it this year in the big leagues and have a huge impact. So, yeah.
What did you think, Ethan, when you saw that he was going to be playing in center field for San Diego in spring training? We were all like, wow, I mean, that's interesting. Let's see how it goes. And then it looks like he's been doing it for a long time. Maybe easier for you to be able to say, hey, I knew he was going to be good wherever, but I mean, it's just so rare to see a rookie infielder go to the outfield and play among, you know, the best center field we saw this year.
Yeah, no, I saw him at the end of the year in Double A last year, and he was working, like taking reps in left field and stuff, but you can tell he's a good athlete. San Diego does a really good job at like finding good athletes and keeping them athletic, not just sticking them to one position and stuff. So yeah, it was no shock. Dude's a freak athlete, and I think he can do it anywhere on the field, honestly. So
that's Ethan Salas on the Hot Sheet. You can, if you want to listen to the rest of it, you can go and find them at Baseball America and subscribe. But I think it's important to remember, because I've seen, you know, comments, he's a little on the dry side. Well, he's 18 years old. Turned 18 this summer. It's remarkable that, you know, imagine your 18-year-old. I have a 19 and a 21-year-old. I can't imagine them living on their own in a minor league baseball season, you know, with a bunch of guys who are all older than he is. Remember, he's the youngest guy in his league at high single A Fort Wayne, you know, doing this all summer. And then, okay, now you're going to go to Arizona. You're going to play in the fall league against some of the top prospects. You're going to be doing these interviews with, you know, Baseball America. It's asking a lot
yep.
of kids these ages. And we know, well, we got a big signing bonus. He has to prove it. He has to do a lot. Does it accelerate your timeline at all just because you signed for, you know, $5 million in the international free agent market? You're still 18 years old. You're still a kid and trying to navigate all that means while also having the responsibility of trying to develop as a baseball player with that pressure.
Not only as a baseball player, as a catcher. You know, just a completely different level of responsibility at the big league level. It's just a completely different level. There's just, you third baseman, great, go play third. You know, oh, catch it, we need you to hit. We need you to hit for power. We need you to be extremely good at blocking balls. You need to be able to call a good game. You need to be able to work with 12, 13, 14, maybe 20 different pitchers in the course of a season. It is, it's just different. It's funny though, I have people in the chat going, yeah, this is like asking almost any 17 or 18 year old about their life. How was your day? It's fine. It's good. What'd you do at school today? Not much.
What'd you learn about?
What'd you learn? I don't remember.
Mom, stop asking me so many questions.
Hey, Bo is six.
Just try to take an interest in your life. That's all.
Bo is 6 years old. How was school? Fine. What'd you do? No, I don't know. Played. Who'd you play with? I don't even remember. Wesley. I don't know. What did you learn about today? I don't even remember. All right. Cool, man. Well.
Good talk.
Good talk. See you at dinner. I mean, what in the world?
Ethan definitely comes from the Kyle Higashioka school of vocal inflection and range, which is
I'm very
to
excited.
Say it's almost
very
none.
It's cool.
Just, hey, maybe a good
sign. I never thought I'd be World Series MVP. It feels really good.
I'm mostly excited to join the big league club and bring my level of intensity and enthusiasm to what they already have in that clubhouse.
I thought the end, though, about Jackson Merrill and knowing this guy was my teammate minutes ago, essentially.
Yeah,
and now
dude.
He's probably rookie of the year and
I can get
had
there.
This amazing season and it happened just like that for him. So anyway, thanks for that and thanks for the show today, guys. Good job as always, Tier 1s. Thank you so much. For Paul Reindl and Stephen Woods, I'm Ben Higgins. Annie and Elston coming up next. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. right here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.